I'm Marlena, and I want to welcome you to Marlena, right here on ACB Radio Mainstream, where for about the next 60 minutes or so, we'll be taking your calls at 1-866-666-7926. Come on in, sit down, take your shoes off, give me a call, won't you? Hello and welcome to Marlena. This week we're going to spend some time with Jay Blake. Jay Blake is a remarkable person who, up until about 1997, didn't realize perhaps quite how remarkable he was. He was a mechanic for a trucking company, and one day while at work, a tire on which he was working exploded in his face. Jay was thrown into the air, about 15 feet into the air, and landed on his face, giving him multiple fractures of the face and leaving him blind, without the sense of taste, and without the sense of smell. But that didn't stop Jay, and he's got a fascinating story to tell. Jay, welcome to Marlena.
Thank you, Marlena. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's great to have you, and we may be having a wee bit of a technical issue, but we're going to keep on going because our technical man, Dave, in the UK, he can fix anything. You know what I mean? This is a very relaxed program. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Jay. What is it that motivates you?
What motivates me is life. I'm very lucky to be alive. I love life, and I am incredibly fortunate. I have two wonderful kids and a great, wonderful girlfriend, and I have the ability, and I am following my dream. So with all those pieces put together, life is a great place.
Tell me a little bit about how it was for you when you woke up and you realized that you were blind.
Well, really, I was conscious through my accident, although I don't remember any of it. The first thing I do remember is I had a choice to live or die. And once I chose, I thought of my two children, and I didn't want to leave them, so I decided I wanted to wake up. And when I woke up, my older brother Jimmy was at my bedside, and I asked him, am I alive? And he said yes. And then I said, am I blind? And he said yes. And at that point, I was like, okay, let's figure this out and try and make the best of it. At that time, I had one eye that they were trying to save, and I can remember the doctor coming in and shining a light in my eye and asking me if I could see it, and I remember the muscles in my little toe straining to try and see that light, but it was not meant to be. So
you pretty much then knew immediately that, in fact, you were going to go on a new adventure in life, and it was going to be learning how to see life through ways different than your physical eyes.
Correct.
Okay, so then you got out of the hospital, and you went to the Carroll Center in Massachusetts, is that right?
Yes, I got out of the hospital. My accident happened May 22nd, 1997.
And how old were you?
I was 31 years old. And I got out of the hospital about 3.5 weeks after that. And then I was home, and after I was home for, I don't know if it was 3 or 4 days or a week or so, but it was soon after being home, I had navigated around my house and found my way out to my garage where my toolbox now was, and I started going through my toolbox and realized realizing that even though I had no sight, I could tell what things were, and that someday I would learn how to use my tools again. And I started mobility training and braille training, which was very frustrating. And in September, I entered the Carroll Center for the Blind in Newton, Mass., which was the most incredible experience of my life. It's an incredible, incredible facility with incredible instructors. And ironically enough, my father was a local business owner for probably 30 years. And one of our neighbors, when I was just a child, and possibly even before I was born, actually, was on the board of this facility, of this place, and he asked my dad, he said, "Hey, I'm gonna, you know, my business is not allowing me to spend the time to be on this board. Would you like to take my seat on the board?"
Oh, wow.
And my father said, "Well, what is this place?" He said, "It's the Carroll Center for the Blind." So my father was on the board at the Carroll Center for the Blind for 20 years before, 20, 25 years before my accident even happened.
Okay, and I just got word. The good news is that the technical guy over in the UK fixed it.
Hey, Dave, so, you're doing a
Dave,
great job.
Let's high-five him, see if he could see us. Hey! Let me just do a really quick recap really fast. We're talking tonight, you're listening to the Marlena program, and we're talking tonight with Jay Blake, who in 1997, I think you said,
yeah.
While working on the job as an auto mechanic and working on a tire, experienced the awful thing of having this tire blow up in his face. He was thrown 15 feet into the air, landed yards away from where he was working, landed face down on the concrete floor of the garage, and was left without sight. And for those of us who are blind, this is harder to imagine, without the sense of smell or the sense of taste. And we've been talking a bit about what it was like for Jay to wake up and discover, first of all, that he had lost his sight. And Jay, you pretty much said that you kind of thought, well, all right, you know, this is the way it's going to go, and so I just got to get on with it. Is that right?
Yes, I was very fortunate to be alive and just had to make the best of it.
Yeah. And then, of course, you moved on, just recapping a bit further, you moved over to the Carroll Center and in Newton, Massachusetts, and got rehabilitation there. And we're just sharing, as we learned that we were finally up and live, not Memorex, you were just sharing that the irony of the whole thing was that your dad actually had a seat on the board of the Carroll Center at one time?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. So, okay, we've caught everybody up. So you had a dream, right? Even before you lost your sight, you were like a race car dude, right?
Absolutely. I was probably, I'd say, in the fourth grade or so, and I had a dream to work on a professional race team. I wanted to be the mechanic crew chief of a professional drag racing team.
And so when you became blind, what did you think happened to your dream initially?
I really thought my dream was over. I was at the Carroll Center for 6.5 months, and then after I got out of the Carroll Center, a friend of mine in September invited me down to Reading, Pennsylvania, to the NHRA National Drag Race. A race they were having down there. And, you know, drag racing being such an enormous passion for me, I was very fearful about going, because there's so much in drag racing, but without sight or smell, I wasn't really sure if I'd be able to enjoy it completely.
Yeah.
And after being there for about an hour, I realized that even though I had lost the sense of sight and smell and taste, that the passion and my love for the sport was still there. And over that weekend, I decided that one way or another, I was going to follow my dream. And not anybody's going to hire me that I have no sight, so nobody's going to hire me to work in their race car. So I decided I was going to start my own race team. And in 1999, I formed a nonprofit corporation called Follow a Dream, which is a nonprofit corporation designed to educate children and adults on the power of positive thinking and self-determination. And one of the tools I use to prove what I'm talking about is what they call an alcohol funny car, which is a race car that competes in drag racing. It is an 8-cylinder engine, and it creates 3,000 horsepower.
Whoa.
And will accelerate from 0 to 250+ miles an hour in 5 seconds. And I physically work on this car myself with no sight at all.
And so you take this car around around the United States, and who do you talk to? Who do you show?
I have spoken to people in elementary school up to corporations. I just got back from Arkansas, where I did a team building seminar for a company called Gates Belts, and I've done presentations at the Carroll Center. Actually, when I was down in Arkansas, I tried to hook up to Lions World Services to go do a presentation for them. I do presentations to, you know, any school or business group or civic group or hospitals, you know. And when I do presentations at facilities, schools for the blind, I let people look at the race car the way I look at the race car. And we don't let many people touch it, but when you don't have sight, you have to look through your hands, from what I've learned. And so I open it up to them because it gives them an opportunity to see something very unique. And that's, you know, Follow Dreams about making a difference.
That's fascinating. I'm going to ask Gary, the board guy. He's really my husband, but we don't tell anybody that. We call him Gary, the board guy. We're going to ask Gary, the board guy, to open the lines up so that if there are listeners who do want to call, the number to call is 866-666-7926. Gary reports that the line is open. Let me give the number again as though people don't know it. 866-666-7926. Let me also say, just for a wee bit of housekeeping, that if you are listening to this program and any time other than Sunday night, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 6 Pacific, or Monday morning at 1 Universal, you're listening to a replay, and if you call the number, you will get a busy signal. So this is live during the 8 to 9 Eastern hour. What, Jay, for you, going back again to the transition from Jay, the fully sighted guy working on a huge, giant truck tire, the guy that could, you know, jump in a vehicle and go anywhere. You had a wife, you had kids. What was the most surprising thing to you about living life as a blind person? What's the thing that most, whether it's good surprise or bad surprise, what kind of gotcha?
I've been amazed, absolutely amazed, at what you can do without sight.
Yay! I'm not supposed to do that. I'm supposed to quietly listen.
You know, I mean, and that's, it's what I try and tell people and show people. There are people that, you know, have watched me work on this race car and watched me do things in my shop, and, you know, they're amazed at what I can do and how I can do it. And, you know, it's second, a lot of it is second nature to me now, but it amazes people that somebody without sight can do some of the things I do. And I'm very happy to share that with people so they understand that if you don't have sight, if you're blind, that you are capable of doing things. And one of the very fortunate things I've been able to do is help some people that have recently lost their sight.
Tell me about that. Yeah.
You know, hey, it's not over. I know you think it is, but it's not. Trust me. And, you know, I really miss the ability, not having the ability to drive, but, you know, you can't have everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I am totally blind, and I am blind because I have when I was growing up, it was called RLF. Now it's called ROP. Everything must change, even though it's the exact same thing. And that is that I was a premature baby and put into an incubator. And because I was so tiny, they thought that increasing the oxygen would help me to survive, and it probably did, and it blinded me. So, you know, I mean, being blind is just much better than being dead. And that's kind of what I, you know, sort of share with people as well, is that, yeah, it's, you live life differently, but you nonetheless live your life.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So, okay.
And you know, I truly consider myself very fortunate that I was able to see for 31 years. You know, there, I understand what colors are and things that, unfortunately, people that were born blind, they don't have the same understanding of certain things that I do. But on the other hand, they understand other things that I don't understand. So it's,
yeah,
you know, it's a give and take situation.
Everyone brings something uniquely wonderful to the table, I think. And
yeah.
And that's, and I think where we, you know, last week on the program, we had a couple on from Colorado, a very capable, blind couple who have experience in, caring for children, and they want to start a daycare center, and the state of Colorado has denied them a license simply because they're blind. And that, this is the thing that society misses, and this is the reason why we need people like you, and other people going around the country showing people, hey, I was once sighted, now I'm blind, and I'm still capable. We've got a call. Let's bring them into the room. Hello, caller. With whom are we speaking?
This is Dave in
Hello,
Dave. California.
You know my spiel, don't you?
Well, yeah. Good evening. Got a question, and probably, and hello to the gentleman, I forgot your name, sorry.
Jay.
I've been blind all my life, and yet I have to say that the thing that makes me angriest of all, and I can do about anything I want to do too, but my family was always so four-wheel motivated that I basically was raised with an unconscious knowledge that I was less than they were. I still carry that to this day.
You mean because you can't drive?
Yes. I still carry that to this day. I hate the fact that I can't drive, and I hate the fact that choices are so closed to me, I feel, and always have been. How do you get around that mindset?
Well, Dave, right?
Yes.
The way I've gotten around it is there's nothing you can do about it. And it doesn't make you less of a person.
In America, it does. I'm sorry. I wish it didn't, but it does.
Well, it doesn't make us less of a person. It just makes it harder to get around. I'm not sure. Whereabouts in California do you live?
I live in the central part of the state, in Visalia. It's about halfway between L.A. and San Francisco, but it really doesn't matter. Where I live is irrelevant.
but are there taxis in the area?
Oh, yeah, and I use them. I mean,
right.
I use the bus. I use all the, you know, I use all the stuff. I've raised the family. I do everything that you're supposed to do. That's what I'm trying to say. I've not let, you know, I had a career. It kind of blew, but that's a long story. I don't know. I cannot get it out of my head that this, and every time I do it, I go out. I don't enjoy it. I admit I don't enjoy the bus. I don't enjoy public transit. Never have.
Right. I understand that. You know, with taxis, it makes it much easier because it's kind of like you're being
But you have to have won the lotto.
Yeah, that's true.
Well,
yeah,
except that, hang on, guys. I mean, there is something to be said for, I mean, okay, I'm lucky. We have a car in this house, okay? But by the time we pay the gas, the insurance, the upkeep on that car, and I admit it is a convenience and I don't want to ever see it go away, but it ain't any cheaper than a taxi.
No, it isn't. You're right.
It's really not. And
I've run the numbers, and you're right. Using a taxi frequently is like paying for your own car.
And Dave, I didn't mean to jump all over you. It's just that's one of my hot buttons is because I used to do it. I used to do the exact same thing and say, well, yeah, but the taxi's so expensive
it's more expensive per mile, though. See, that if you want to get down to that. But, I mean, that's a semantic that you can argue from now till eternity that it's still, I don't know,
Dave, what I can honestly tell you is I've accepted it that I can't drive. It doesn't always make me happy. The world, you know, definitely revolves around transportation, and, you know, it can be frustrating, but, you know, at some point it just helps if you can accept it, and it is what it is, and every day it's not easy to accept it, but, you know, you do the best you can.
Well, I do the best I can. It's just usually not good enough.
Well, but I think, you know what, Dave? I mean, you and I are friends, and I care a lot about you, and I care a lot about Pam, and I will say that I think the fact that you made this call is really huge. And I think what Jay is saying is there comes a point where you got to let it go. As hard as it is, man, you got to let it go because it ain't going to change.
Yeah, and Dave, you look at what they're doing with cars today, and, you know, maybe someday...
Well, it's terribly boring, that's for sure.
Maybe someday, between all the beeps and buzzers they put in cars and GPS,
yeah,
you know, you never give up hope because maybe someday we're going to drive. Boy, will that be a scary world.
I'm getting off the streets then.
It may happen.
All right, Dave, thanks so much for calling.
Hey,
give my best
there,
to Pam. The telephone number to call is 866-666-7926. You know, and there are times, I mean, I consider myself, Jay, to be a reasonably well-adjusted blind person, you know, I mean, but, you know, I mean, I got angry just even this afternoon. We remodeled our kitchen. And we have all these new appliances that we're putting in, and we shopped for hours for these stupid things to make sure that we could either, you know, put Braille labels on them, or they didn't need labels, and I could run them as is because they were knobs that clicked instead of stupid touch screens. And so we finished labeling the oven. And I was making a diagram to put on the door. It's a wall oven because my husband is a wheelchair user, so we have things a little differently arranged than the average sort of kitchen would. And so I was sort of putting a diagram on the door to remind myself what the abbreviations were and what the defaults were. And the way I was doing it, it became clear after we started 50% of it that it just wasn't going to work. And I was just disgusted. I just, you know, and the thought went through my mind, damn it, why Why can't I see? Why do I have to do this? And I think that it really takes a lot of courage for people who've been blind from birth to kind of, you know, come on this program and say, you know what, it makes me angry. This part of being blind makes me angry.
Absolutely. For anybody, I mean, you know, every person has something that really frustrates them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the majority of blind people, and I'm sure there are some out there that wouldn't say this, but the majority of blind people, if they could choose between blindness and sight, they'd pick sight, but we don't have the choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, we've got another call. Let's bring him in. Hello, with whom are we speaking? From where do you call?
Hi, Marlena. Now, this is not fixed.
Oh, this is Pam. Pam of Dave and Pam.
The dynamic duo, the traumatic whatever.
That's right.
But it's interesting because I was going to ask, I was going to make a comment, but I was also going to first ask something sort of akin to what Dave is saying. And mine, I guess, is the other half of the couple question. The question from the other half of the equation, if you will. I don't feel, well, I was blinded in an automobile accident when I was 4 months old. I don't remember seeing, which I think was an advantage because I don't miss what I never had. People say, oh, you poor thing, as it goes on with your talk about the various items that we all bring to the table. People, you poor thing, blah, blah, blah. I say, well, hey, I'm alive. They didn't know whether I was going to have any cognition whatever. I mean, there were thoughts of not even being able to tell until I was three whether I was going to be developmentally disabled, which at that time we called it mentally retarded. And so the fact that I am reasonably intelligent and that I'm able to function and do my thing, I think blindness is the worst that could have happened.
Yeah.
Or the least.
The least.
Happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I see Dave, and we have been through counseling, and we have done various and sundry things, and he doesn't deny it. And we both have a bent toward depression. I think this is worse. His is worse than mine. But I sort of, and he's sitting right here listening to this, so I'm not hiding anything. What? I don't know what I can tell him. Probably nothing more than what you've already said, Jay, except just keep reinforcing it and telling him and reminding him that I love him, that he's important. His daughter adores him. His grandchildren absolutely adore him. And sometimes he still says that isn't good enough.
It seems like, you know, and I don't know Dave well enough. I just talked to him for, you know, a couple minutes, but it's kind of like it's what he's hung his hat on.
Yes, and his family, they had very high expectations, and frankly, I don't think blindness was ever really acknowledged. It was always sort of glossed over, especially after his birth mother died. I mean, there's a whole very deep history, and I don't think you're going to get over that.
Yeah.
I don't know, even in the 12 years since I've known him.
Yeah.
You know? And counseling, I'm a huge, huge believer in counseling. And
in what?
In counseling, therapy, talk therapy.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the reality is we can't drive, but there are a lot of people that can't drive but don't have the use of taxis and don't have the use, of public transportation. So when you think it's bad, oh boy, it could be a lot worse.
Yeah, like for instance, and Jay, that's a really good point. That I know many people who are quadriplegic who cannot use a taxi, and that is not even an option for them. And so they're public, and they can't drive either because they. You know, they can't afford the incredibly expensive adaptations that have to be made, or their disability. I mean, I know a guy, I used to work for this guy who could move one finger. That's it. That's all he could move. And so not only could Tony not drive, but when we used to go out for chili and beer, I used to feed him. And that was just a hoot, the blind lady trying to find the gimp guy's mouth, you know.
Oh, man.
I mean, that was a hoot. I'd go, Tony, talk. I got to find your mouth, man.
Oh.
You know, and I mean, when you think it can't get any worse, just, you know, just look around because, man, something's out there with it.
And I also find that keeping a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll say something and Dave will say, I don't think that's funny. And then later on he can, and we're not going into a Dave and Pam show here, I don't mean that, but keeping a sense of humor. And I know sometimes I tend with my orientation difficulties, undoubtedly a cause of the accident, although we didn't recognize that. Sometimes I can't cross the street straight. And I kind of say, okay, I got to get across whatever street it is, and I'll figure it out later. And the cars are honking. And, why can't they just let me get lost?
Yeah. But you acknowledge that and you move on.
I do. Yeah. And finally, I kind of go, okay.
Yeah.
And some days, if I really don't think I can handle it, although those are becoming less and less, because I think I've allowed myself that, okay, not today. I'm not in shape for this today. I'm not going to do it.
Right.
You know, and Dave needs to understand that there are sighted people out there that can't drive either.
That's right.
So
that's right.
You know, for one reason or another, he's, you know, being blind isn't the only thing that keeps you from driving. And, you know, by using taxis and public transportation, you don't have to worry about if the car breaks down.
Right.
Or, you know, if it snows.
Yeah, and I do want to get off. One more comment.
Yeah, real quick.
Let you go. I think we believe for so long that sighted had everything in their favor.
Right.
Did everything.
And they don't.
Sometimes you see a blind or a sighted person making a mess, and you say, gee, I'm glad they do that now. I'm not really, but I'm kind of glad.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Pam,
thanks
so much.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Have a great day, Pam.
Bye-bye. The telephone number is 866-666-7926. What is what do you think, Jay, is the thing, if you could say, I have learned one thing from all of this, what would that one thing be? From, you know, you went to work one day, you were sighted, the rest of your life you're a blind guy. If you could have learned one thing, what would that be?
It's amazing what you can do when you believe in yourself and you put your mind to something. You know, if you put your mind to something and you believe in yourself, you can accomplish anything. And, you know, you can't give up, and you got to think positively and just make it happen.
Now, and this coming from, if I understood the information that I read, if I understood that correctly, this is coming from a guy whose marriage went to heck after your accident, right?
Yeah.
And
my marriage, I went through a divorce after my accident, yeah.
And was that, I mean, if this is too personal, just holler, because we're all about respecting boundaries here, but was that because your former wife could not deal with your blindness?
I would say it was a variety of different things.
Uh-huh.
So that's really, just a variety of things.
So the point that I'm driving at here is, okay, we got somebody who became blind, lost his sense of smell, lost his sense of taste, and his marriage fell apart. And he's sitting here telling us, you got to be positive, man. You got to be positive. How do you do it?
Well, you know, part of it I think I could have been born with. My mother, my legal name is Harry Initial J. Blake. And my mother nicknamed me Happy Harry as a kid. So I've always been somewhat of a happy-go-lucky person. And that has helped me. And, you know, through growing up, I've learned about life. And, you know, there are so many things in life that give us a reason to be depressed and to give up and to quit. And, you know, it's up to us. It's our choice whether we want to give up. And giving up is fairly easy to do. You just say, you know what, I can't do this, I quit, I give up. And once you do that, it's over. But if you really want to accomplish something, you can't give up. And, you know, things happen to us in life, whether it be, you know, an accident or an illness or a birth, you know, something happens when you're born or a divorce. Or, you know, you could fill books up with things, terrible things that can happen, divorces, you know, who knows? And you don't give up on yourself. If bad things happen, yeah, you dig deep inside yourself and you move on, you know? It's an amazing world out there, and we live in America. This is an amazing country, and there's so many opportunities if you're willing to go after them. And they may not be easy, but to succeed isn't necessarily easy. It takes a ton of hard work and a ton of dedication.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to give up and get down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. What, tell me a little bit, don't tell me anything. We're going to take a call. Let me push all the right buttons here. My goodness gracious, let's bring this caller into the room. Hello, caller, with whom are we speaking and from where do you call?
Hi, Marlena, this is Marsha.
Hey, Marsha from Michigan.
How are you doing tonight?
I am, if I were any better, Marsha, it would be illegal, immoral, or fattening. How are you?
I feel the exact same way.
All right. Say hello to Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, very well, thanks. So nice to make your acquaintance.
Oh, likewise.
Well, you know, I have a question for you. Maybe put a little levity on the situation. I know that this discussion has been a little heavy, which is fine. But as a person, okay, I've been blind all my life. Thank God I have my sense of smell and taste.
Yeah, can you
imagine?
Except
when my Michigan sinuses screw up.
Or you burn something, right?
Oh, that's right. But what would you do down in the pit? As you're working on a race car, how could you tell if you had some sort of a fuel leak without the sense of smell? And also, how do you enjoy your food? You can't taste a good steak or a nice glass of wine or a beer or, you know, how do you enjoy your food?
Well, I'll answer the first question first. When I work on this car, the way we... In drag racing, it's different than NASCAR, where the cars are running and come in real quick. We're set up very differently.
Uh-huh.
With drag racing, you go down the track, and then you stop, and you bring the car to the pit area and get ready to go again. But there's a crew of 10 people that work on this race car.
Oh, okay.
So I'm the only blind guy there, and I'm surrounded by sighted people.
Uh-huh.
So, if there's a fuel leak, sometimes I can tell by feeling the fuel. Methanol, which we run in our race car, is extremely cold.
Oh, okay.
So if you feel it, and, you know, there are certain places you'd find a fuel leak, and certain places you wouldn't. So
would it ordinarily have an odor?
Yeah, you know, I think so.
Uh-huh.
And when it burns, it's got an odor.
Uh-huh.
And as far as food goes, I kind of eat by texture or by memory. And, you know, food doesn't really do much for me.
I understand that.
I eat it because it gives me energy, and I really enjoy crunchy things. But, yeah, food, you know, I don't even come close to enjoying it like I used to.
Do you miss it, though? I mean, I would.
Oh, me too.
Sometimes.
Huh.
You know, sometimes,
yeah.
I do.
Is there anything that maybe you possibly might dream about? Like you remember fried chicken or a piece of good pie? Or do you ever dream about what things used to taste like?
I dream about stuff, but not food.
See, Marcia and I, we're food girls, right?
Yes, ma'am.
We dream about food, man. In fact, we probably do, and we've got our taste, right?
That's right.
Interesting.
Well, thank you very much, and I'll let you go, and it was nice talking with you, Jay, and, of course, you always, Marlena.
Well, thanks.
Thank you, Marcia. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Talk to you soon, Marcia.
Good night.
Night. The telephone number is 866-666-7926. We'll be with you for another 10 minutes, 12 minutes, thereabouts. Actually, it's more than that. It's more like 18 minutes or whatever. Do the math. That was never my strong suit. Blind or sighted, man, I could never do math. Hello, you're with Marlena and Jay. With whom are we speaking? From where are you calling?
Good evening. This is Frank Casey from Albany, New York.
Ah, my friend Frank. How you doing?
Good. Well, I'd just like to say that Jay is a real inspiration, and I'm not just saying that to make him feel good, but it's good to hear somebody who has a multiple inconvenience. Notice I didn't say disability.
Right.
And, I think that a lot of blind people could learn so much from him.
Yeah. Are you there, Frank?
I'm here.
You got quiet.
Hey, Frank. Thank you for calling. And I'd just like to let you know that the July 4th weekend, we're going to be in West Lebanon, New York, at a race. And if you'd like to visit my website, which is www.followadream.org,
right.
If you send me an email, we'd love to have you come to the race.
Okay. It's on July 4th weekend, right?
Right.
Is that going to be at Lebanon Valley?
Yes, exactly.
Yep, we've heard about it.
Okay.
All right. So it's followadream.org, right?
Right, followadream.org.
Okay.
And Frank, if you do that, you'll have to call in on a subsequent Marlena show and give us your account of it and what you saw and all that good
stuff.
What
I saw. Very good.
That'd be cool.
Maybe Jay will even let me drive.
Jay, don't do it. Don't do it. I know this guy. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Hey, they don't let me drive, Frank, so you don't get to play him.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Frank, give my best to Kathy.
Okay, I will.
Okay. 866-666-7926. So what exactly do you do with this car? So this car, you take it around the country, and it does actually race? I mean, it's an actual racing car?
Oh, yes. This is an actual racing car. It's one of the... Well, I've been racing this car for this will be my third year with this particular car.
Now, is this like in the NASCAR races where, you paint a name on the side, like, the Nextel car and
Yeah, currently Follow a Dream is looking for corporate sponsorship to help our program grow and expand and also keep the program alive. So you do put corporate names on the side of the car, and we're a nonprofit, so we're looking for donors to help us raise money so we can bring this program to schools and business groups and different medical facilities or rehab facilities and talk about the power of positive thinking and self-determination. But we do race the car in competition. And the first year, we were fourth in the Northeast and in the top 20 in the world.
Wow.
This is a very, very competitive car, and we are currently preparing right now to head to Gainesville, Florida for March 18th through the 20th, where we will be racing at the Gator Nationals, which is a drag race in Gainesville, Florida. So it is a true race car.
Could you describe what the car looks like? I'm blind from birth. I don't have a clue what this car looks like, both inside and outside.
Outside, currently, it's a silver car, and on the front and the back of it is orange.
Hmm.
And it says Follow a Dream on the side. The body of the car, which is the outer shell, actually comes off. We can pick it up and take the body off.
Really?
And the
and the body weighs about 200 pounds. And underneath the body is a frame made out of round tubing called chromoly tubing. And the car is about 15 feet long, we'll say. And there's a big eight-cylinder motor that sits in the middle of the car. And then the driver sits behind the car, behind the engine, between the two back tires. And the back tires themselves are about 17 inches wide and 32 inches tall.
Wow.
And the front tires are about 6 inches wide and about a foot tall.
And how high is the car?
The very top of the car is probably 4.5 to 5 feet tall.
So the driver's practically sitting on the ground.
Oh, yes. The car is about 2 inches off the ground.
Now, I've heard, you know, my husband used to watch the NASCAR races all the time, and one of the things that I learned about was how hot those cars get inside. Is this the case with this kind of car?
No, this kind of car doesn't get that hot inside because you're not in it that long. The fire suit, the safety equipment you wear, is extremely thick, and you do get very hot. But NASCAR, where they drive around in circles for hundreds of miles,
yeah,
they generate much more heat, and they're in the car much longer. Where in drag racing, the driver is probably strapped into the car, hopefully for not more than, you know, 10, 15 minutes by the time he gets strapped in and goes down the racetrack and gets out of the car.
Do you think that working as a mechanic in general is a viable occupation for someone who is blind? And specifically, do you think someone who is blind could do what you do, work, you know, and just sort of a regular drag race crew and do whatever it is that position would do?
There are certain pieces of it that a blind person can do in the drag racing world, but there are situations where you do need sight. And you know, that is the true reality. As a viable profession for a blind person to be a mechanic, if he could have the opportunity to do that and could work in an area that was set up for him, there are parts of it, yes, that are a viable option. I've talked to people that have made adaptive equipment to work, and there are some blind mechanics, most of whom I've talked to, either do it for themselves. I've never talked to anybody that works in like a car dealership or something like
sure.
that. Like, you know, I'm not going to say you can't do it because you can. It's just, it's different.
Well,
now I know a couple that I've talked to that are small engine mechanics for like lawnmowers and tractors and actually Lions World Services in Arkansas has a course for small engine mechanics. So.
What adaptive technology do you use to work on these cars for you?
I have a talking tire pressure gauge. I use the click rule. I store information in my Braille and Speak.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it really is.
Huh, that's neat.
I have a talking vernier caliper that measures things, and So there's some talking tools I have.
Huh, that's neat. If folks want to get a hold of you, for instance, it's conceivable that the American Council of the Blind has affiliates in every state, and every state affiliate holds a convention each year. Some affiliates, like California and maybe Florida, hold a convention twice a year. But if people want to get a hold of you to come to their convention, how can they reach you?
The best way to reach me is through our website. You can email me at jay@followadream.org. You can visit the website, which is followadream.org. Or you could call my office at 508-420-8319.
Do you always travel with the car when you speak, or do you sometimes, does the car stay home and rest and you go out and do the work?
Sometimes the car will stay home, but the majority of all my speaking engagements, everybody wants me to bring the race car. So usually we travel in tandem.
Huh.
But it's not a necessity to bring the race car. It's an option.
Yeah, I think it would be neat to see the race car. I mean, when we had our annual convention, the American Council has an annual convention each summer, and we were in Alabama last summer, so you know what we were near. We were near Talladega,
yeah,
racetrack. And one of the tours, unfortunately, I didn't get to go on it, but one of the tours was to the racetrack, and there was an attempt, and I'm not sure if it ever happened, but there was an attempt to provide people with the opportunity to actually get down on the track, go around the track, see a car, etc. And that was our most popular tour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we'd be happy to come, to talk with the people and arrange to come to a convention, and I could speak and display the race car. It's what Follow Dream's all about.
Yeah.
You know, it's spreading the message and showing people the race car. You know, it's amazing what you can do when you put your mind to it.
You know, as we wrap up, I've got a special piece of music that I want to go out with. But before we do that, let me just give you an opportunity to leave a message. Any message that you would like to leave. If you're speaking now through a medium which not only will reach blind people, well, not only blind people, but certainly we're targeted for the audience of people who are blind, but this program will be replayed for 24 hours and then it will be archived and it will be permanently up on the internet. So 5 years from now, someone could be listening to you, someone who maybe has recently lost their sight. If you could give them a message, what would that be?
To believe in yourself, think positively, be determined, and dare to dream.
And what more could you ask than that? Jay, it has been a pleasure to meet you. And maybe we'll get together again in a few months and see how Follow a Dream is going.
We'd love the opportunity, Marlene. It was a pleasure to be on your show and to meet you. And we look forward to being back on the Marlena Show.
Thank you so much, Jay, and keep following your dream.
Absolutely, and you do the same.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Movement everywhere, improvement. 150 million tongues, one clear voice. From the land down under, a song, the sound of thunder.
There's a buzz in the air, and the people from far and near have made a choice. The choice is clear.
Changing what it means to be blind, step by step, one day at a time. Still much to do, but it shall be. Let the sighted eyes of the world will be able to see. There will be changes. The power of the dream. Due diligence by you and me. Changing what it needs to be fine. Women of every nation are rising to the occasion to change humankind by movement and mind. We shall be as one. What of youth and the children? Empowerment is their freedom, and we must convey by example so they can say, no big deal, I'm fine. And the eyes of the earth will acknowledge the person first through our vision by knowing our line. Step by step, one day at a time. Too much to do, but it shall be. At the sighted eyes of the world, we'll be able to see. And there will be changes. The power of the dream. To diligence by you and me. Changing what it means to be blind. Drops of rain grow forests and bring big mountains down. Hands across all borders, boundaries, and nations take all down. Lift the veils, unfurl the sails, new journeys will abound. No one but ourselves can stop us now. Step one day at a time. Still much to do, but it shall be. At the sighted eyes of the world, we'll be able to see. There will be changes. The power of the dream. Due diligence by you and me. Changing what it means to be blind. Changing what it means to be blind.
You've been listening to Marlena on ACB Radio. We'll be back next week, same time, same place.